Welcome to In My Backyard, an open conversation about children and mental health. We all know a child who's struggling, whether that child tells us or not. In this podcast, we speak with experts on the many factors of emotional distress in children, how to address those factors, and how to create a community where all children can be healthy and happy. This podcast is made possible through generous donations from supporters and listeners like you. Please visit tgclb.org or text HOPE to 562-262-5689 to make a one-time donation or join our Hope and Healing Club to become a monthly donor today. Your host is Tricia Costales, CEO of the Guidance Center, a nonprofit children's mental health agency in Long Beach, California.
I'm Tricia Costales, your host of In My Backyard. I'm a licensed clinical social worker and the chief executive officer of the Guidance Center, a nonprofit children's mental health agency serving 3,500 children and families every year. In episode 2 of season 3, we spoke about how trauma impacts children and how mental health treatment can address and resolve the traumatic reactions. In that episode, our guest and I referred to ACEs, a questionnaire that scores what we call adverse childhood experiences. ACEs specifically refer to adverse or traumatic experiences a child may endure growing up that have a negative impact in childhood and beyond into adulthood. According to the Center for Disease Control, ACEs can have lasting negative effects on health, well-being during childhood, and future life opportunities, such as education and job potential. These experiences can increase the risks of injury, sexually transmitted infections, maternal and child health problems, including teen pregnancy, pregnancy complications, and fetal death, involvement in sex trafficking, and a wide range of chronic diseases and leading causes of death, such as cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and suicide. Unresolved ACEs can lead to toxic stress in children, which negatively affects brain development, immune systems, and stress response systems. As the CDC reports, this can affect children's attention, decision-making, and learning. It also negatively impacts the formation of healthy relationships. Given this foundation, it is unsurprising that, unless childhood trauma is treated, it leads to chronic struggles well into adulthood. Today, we've brought back our guest, Rebecca Korb, a registered clinical social worker in the Guidance Center's Long Beach School-Based Program. Rebecca is going to speak to us today about the Adverse Childhood Experiences Questionnaire and its utility in working with children. Welcome back, Rebecca. Thank you for joining us again. For our audience, for those who weren't who missed your last episode, will you please share a little bit about yourself?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be back. My name is Rebecca Korb. I'm a member of our school-based team. I graduated with my master's in social work from UCLA with a concentration in child and family well-being. I am super passionate about working with tiny humans and their families, especially interested in how trauma impacts child development, the family system, school system, everything. And I've been working with tiny humans in various capacities for over 15 years. So lots of experience in all sorts of different areas. And again, just trauma and how that affects our kiddos and our youth is where my passion lies.
Excellent. So I'm going to jump right in. Trauma is what we discussed in your prior episode as well. And in that episode, you mentioned your great appreciation for the ACEs questionnaire. For our audience, could you please explain what this questionnaire is?
Yes. So the ACEs questionnaire all stems from the ACE study, and ACE stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. And this study was conducted by the CDC and Kaiser Permanente in the mid-1990s in San Diego, California. And basically, they looked at what they called adverse childhood experiences, and those were different types of trauma. And so Those included different types of child abuse and household dysfunction. And they looked at how these were correlated with the top 10 leading causes of death in the United States. And what they found out, to me, the biggest thing they found out was that ACEs were very common. They found out that about 67% of the population had at least one ACE. So they had experienced at least one adverse childhood experience. And so they created this questionnaire, and it's 10 questions. And for each question, if you answer yes to having experienced that, you get 1 point, I guess, on the scoring system. So out of 10, you could have up to 10 ACEs, 10 points. And the screening tool is very useful because it's what we can use to screen for toxic stress. And so I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit later. But yeah, the ACE questionnaire, all developed from the ACE study. It's 10 questions, and I think you're going to read those for us next.
I'm going to read some of them. I realized it might be hard to listen to all 10 if I read all 10 of them.
That's fair.
But for our listeners, it is easy to find if you just Google it. But as you said, there are 10 questions on the ACEs. You know, examples are, did you lose a parent through divorce or abandonment or death? Do you live with someone who's depressed or mentally ill or attempted suicide? Is there alcohol or substance abuse problems in your home, domestic violence? Did you feel unloved or did you feel loved? Questions like those. Now, critics point out, I think rightfully, that as great as this questionnaire is, it feels, and I'll say this as a community mental health diehard, it feels geared towards sort of a white, straight, middle-class child's experience, that it misses out. It misses those traumatic experiences that might happen outside of the home, like poverty, community violence, racism, bigotry, chronic health issues. So as a fan of the ACEs, what's your response to this?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. It is definitely a limited questionnaire, I think I would say. You know, it really hits on what we talked about last time, kind of those textbook child abuse, textbook trauma. That doesn't really encompass the community that we serve. It's not necessarily what the kiddos that we're working with are dealing with. It's definitely part of it, but it is not comprehensive. And so my first response is just that, acknowledging it. There are limitations. It's not perfect. For me, it's more about opening the door to talking about trauma. It's about recognizing the connection between our what we're experiencing in our physical health and our mental health. And it's opening the door to that psychoeducation, the connection between, again, what's happening at home, what's happening, what we're experiencing, and then what's going on with our overall well-being. It's a starter. It's a conversation starter for me. I think one thing I've learned in my journey with ACEs is that there's a lot more we can do with them. And so I've been really following the progress of ACEs and what our state especially is doing. And there's this wonderful initiative called the ACEs Aware, and it's led by the Office of the California Surgeon General and the Department of Healthcare Services. And they've really made it their mission to take the ACE study, the ACE questionnaire, and implement it in pediatrician offices. And so they're looking at how we can screen for childhood trauma and kind of mitigate those negative health conditions that we're experiencing, that we've seen that are correlated with childhood trauma. And so what I love about ACEs Aware is they acknowledge the limitations of the original ACEs study and the original ACEs screener. And they created their own screener called the PEARLS, which stood for Pediatric ACEs and Related Life Event Screener. And that second part is really what we're talking about, where the ACE study lacked. So those questions hit at neighborhood, community, school violence. They hit at experiencing discrimination, housing instability, food insecurity, being part of the foster care system, immigration, physical illness or disabilities within the family, all of those other factors that the original ACE screener does not touch on. And so back to your original question, I think my response is the ACE screener is not perfect, and we have to acknowledge that. I do not think it's completely useless. I think, again, it it's becoming more well known. So it is kind of an in. And then I think there are many adaptations that have been made that we can kind of explore. And the Pearls ACEs Aware Initiative is one of those. But yeah, I definitely agree with you in that it's limited.
Just for clarification, the ACEs Aware, the Pearls, it has the original 10 questions, but then adds on those more community-based factors. Is that correct, how it's working?
Okay. Yes. So it's okay. The first 10 are the original ACE questions, and then there's an additional 7 that hit on the more encompassing elements of trauma that we are seeing in community mental health and everywhere in the world. But yeah, more extensive.
It's excellent. I'm excited to see that or hear about that for sure. Now, I think our listeners can pretty easily understand how childhood trauma can impact mental health, and how you could carry that with you, that it could impact your ability to have success professionally and personally later in life. I think the health consequences might need some explaining. So could you please explain for our listeners how on earth might a traumatic childhood make a person more at risk for HIV, let's say, or heart disease or cancer? What is the correlation between the two?
Yes. And so circling back to the ACE study, which is what created our ACE questionnaire, it was that link to toxic stress. And so I know we've talked about that in our last podcast as well, when we were talking about trauma. And toxic stress is, when our body experiences serious, lasting stress without adequate support. So that could mean a nurturing caregiver, a safe, stable environment. When we experience that long lasting stress without those things, our body develops an overactive stress response system. And this is what we call toxic stress. And so there's a physiological changes that happen in our body as a result of toxic stress. And so this looks like a hyperactive stress response system. Our immune system is impacted. Our hormonal systems are impacted. The literal way our DNA is read and transcribed is impacted. And so there are, physiological changes that happen as a result of the trauma that these children are experiencing. And so that was all really proven in the ACE study, which is why I keep circling back to it. And I think what's important to know is that tiny humans are especially vulnerable to this because their brains are still developing. So the stress response system, hormone system, immune systems are all still growing. Our brains are still growing and developing. And so they're especially vulnerable during this period. And then also what the ACE study found is that toxic stress is related to specific health outcomes. And so there's what we call now ACE-related health conditions. And you started to mention some of them, but also asthma, allergies, poor dental health, sleep disturbances, developmental delays, ADHD, depression, all of these things can also be related to experiencing adverse childhood experiences.
I mean, I find that just absolutely fascinating. And I'm so thrilled that there is so much research around this. It seems to me too that the disordered behaviors that might result from a child being very traumatized might also put them at risk for some of the health issues too, even apart from just the toxic stress impact to the bodies. A very traumatized child might be more likely to smoke or to use substances or engage in unsafe relationships. So it feels like there's a double whammy of possible health impact.
Yeah. And I like to explain that too, that difference of, I think it's an and situation. I think experiencing toxic stress definitely impacts our dopamine center, our pleasure reward center, which then impacts our risk-taking behavior. So I think there is the risk-taking behaviors element that puts us at increased risk. But I also think it's the other start, the physiological, the changes in our stress response system. So I think it is a double whammy. It's both sides. And I think an often misconception is that, you could experience childhood trauma and not be a risk taker, and then you won't have any negative consequences. And I think that's not necessarily true, is that whether or not there's risk taken does not necessarily mean you won't have those adverse health outcomes. All to say, though, that just because you have ACEs does not equal negative health outcomes. And I'm sure we will get to that later. But I do just like to point out that I think it's both the risky behaviors and the physiological changes.
And the internal processes that happen. You know, you spoke in our last episode together about how you think ACEs should be administered to all clients. And I actually loved that suggestion. But there are some heavy questions in the survey, you know, questions about feeling unloved, questions about sexual abuse. Like, when in treatment would you administer it? And how would you do it in a way that's not too overwhelming for our clients? We want to talk about trauma with our clients. We don't necessarily want to bludgeon them with it. So how do you go about the administration of this survey?
Yeah. And I think the other thing that comes to mind too is not re-traumatizing. And, you know, when we work with trauma, it's so important to not re-traumatize. So that's another part. But it is hard. It is something that takes a lot of consideration. I think the first thing that I thought of is, you know, we use the DMH Department of Mental Health assessment with our kiddos. And in that assessment, we do ask about trauma. So my first thought is we already are doing it. And again, it's going back to how we're asking the questions. It's coming from a curious stance, non-judgmental, empathetic. I think as of now, with our recent changes to our DMH assessment, it is kind of a more open-ended question when we ask our families about trauma. And that can be kind of hard because trauma can be kind of this abstract, what is trauma? And so in a way, I think having an ACE screener or a PEARLS, which is the more adapted ACE screener, makes it helpful because it is more tangible. It is more concrete. It is, you know, putting into words what might be a really big topic, which is trauma. So in a way, I think that part can be helpful. I also think there's this element of destigmatization when we do kind of name the trauma. You know, I think of how we talk about suicide and how we are trained as mental health professionals to be very direct when talking about suicide and when assessing for suicide. And I think that is to combat stigmatization. That's to make sure that we're clear. And I think it's the same thing with trauma. So yes, those questions are big. They are heavy. They have the potential to be re-traumatizing, but they're direct. And I think there's power in that. And I think there's a level of normalizing, destigmatizing. And so I think that is all very powerful. Another thing too, and I forgot to mention this when I was talking about ACEs Aware and PEARLS, the revamped ACE screener, is that they came up with a way of having an identified screener and a de-identified screener. And so what that meant was the identified screener was where you actually checked off which traumatic experience you had experienced. And the de-identified one was where at the end you reported a number. So you, it was 17 questions, maybe you reported 6, and you didn't actually indicate which traumatic experience you had experienced. And I thought that was a very innovative way to kind of go about what we're talking about right now, which is, you know, it can be very invasive, these questions. And so having to go right into disclosing could be a lot. So I think that is also a wonderful strategy, a wonderful way to go about it. In terms of when, I think, again, we do ask about trauma at assessment. So I can see pros to doing it during assessment. I also see the cons of potentially, you know, wanting more rapport, more relationship before kind of going into it. So I think that's an ongoing conversation. I don't know that I have a confident answer as to when, and I see the pros and cons to different times. And I think one other part I think is important is priming. And so in our assessment, you know, I always explain to our families that this can feel invasive. This can feel like a lot. You know, I'm going to be asking a lot of things that could seem random too about, you know, your childbirth experience. And so I think just letting them know what could be coming is also really helpful.
And I assume that you know, it's a survey, it's pen and paper, but it's not one that we just hand to the clients, here, go fill this out.
Right. I would hope
it's
not.
I would really hope not. I just feel like I need that on the record.
That's
to say that it's done together in conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the questions, if answered in the affirmative, would lead us as mandated reporters to have to break confidentiality and contact Child Protective Services or perhaps even the police, depending on the allegations. How do you ensure that clients fully understand this before they answer?
Yeah.
And do you think, and second to that, do you think sometimes their answers are edited when they realize we might have to make a report?
Mm-hmm. And again, back to that last episode, I know we spent a good chunk talking about our role as mandated reporters. And when you look at the literature and the research on implementing ACE screeners, this is a big concern that comes up of, well, what about my role as a mandated reporter? And the way I look at it is that part doesn't change. Whether we ask implement ACE screeners or not, we are mandated reporters. And whenever I'm meeting a new client, I am reviewing my role as a mandated reporter, reviewing limits of confidentiality, making that abundantly clear, being very transparent. And I'm doing that over multiple sessions to continuously make sure I'm conveying that, especially since I do work with those tiny humans. That level of understanding is a little different than with adults. And so I think number one, it's being transparent. And then I think just also clarifying what that means. And so we're required to make a report when we know or have a reasonable suspicion of abuse or child or of abuse or neglect of a child. And so kind of breaking that down, what does that look like? Psychoeducation on what Child Protective Services is, what it means if we do make a report, understanding that just because we make a report doesn't even mean there will be an investigation. And then I think in terms of the second part of your question, will people kind of edit their answers knowing that we are mandated reporters? I think this is true regardless of ACE screener or no ACE screener, because again, at the end of the day, I am a mandated reporter no matter what at all times. And so ACE screener versus assessing for suicide versus assessing for really anything, there is this, you know, question in the back of my mind of, is my client not telling me everything because they're worried about that? And so again, that goes back to the psychoeducation on what it means. It goes back to building that trust in the rapport, helping my family understand that my goal is their safety, not to get anybody in trouble. And so I think it is inevitable that sometimes people might be afraid to disclose because of our role as mandated reporters. And I think all we can do is be transparent, be honest, educate, and really hope that we build that foundation and that relationship where they feel comfortable disclosing.
We understand more and more and more about how trauma can be generational. And part of it is that internal process that can happen within our bodies when there's toxic stress, but also simply, you know, parents with high ACE scores, unresolved trauma, might struggle to create homes for their children that are free from those same traumatic events that they themselves experienced growing up. So curious if you administer the questionnaire to the parents as well.
Yeah. And so this question really makes me think, because I have never really thought about that. And it seems very obvious, and I'm not sure why I haven't thought about that, because I do think that intergenerational trauma is so prevalent and it is impacting a lot of the kiddos that we're working with. And the ACE screener would be a great way of concretely detecting that. And, you know, I remember when we talked about kind of the assessment process, I shared that I do want to know about caregivers and their experience as children and the type of attachment that they had with their parents and, you know, stressors that they experienced, or even stressors that during pregnancy with my client. And so it does seem like it would be a good idea. It's something I'm still kind of pondering, thinking about. I think it would also be a great starting point, again, for that psychoeducation, because I think in working with our families, it is important to help caregivers understand intergenerational trauma and understand how they were raised and what they experienced might be impacting how they're raising their child. And so for me, again, what I think is so great about the ACE study and the ACE screener is that it's an in, it's a conversation starter. And so for me, I could see the tool being used as just that, of kind of diving into parents' experiences and helping parent reflect on how that might be impacting their relationship with child. The other thing I think of too is just attachment. And we know that experiencing trauma impacts our attachment. And we know that the attachment that we have with our parents predicts the attachment that we will form with our child. And so that's also kind of going through my head of another way we can kind of educate and explore on attachment formation. But I'm curious, I'm going to turn it back to you. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I love that you asked me that. So, because as you were talking, I'm like, it never occurred to me to use it with, until I was writing these questions, It never occurred to me to use it with parents either. And this light bulb just went off in my brain as I was writing the questions, because what a remarkable tool to start the conversation about generational trauma and the cycle of trauma and all of those other elements. Like, what, I think this could be really, really valuable in treatment. And I've never tried it either. And I never thought of it until doing these questions. So I'm curious. I actually want to do some research into this. But to me, it seems like, you know, a way to open the door to that conversation with the parent about how, you know, well, of course you've been struggling, you know, this is generational. Look what happened to you. We all know if our parents and our families are healthy and doing well, then our kids are going to do better too. So why not use it as a path in,
right?
Anyway, I was intrigued by the thought.
Definitely. And then I just kind of even thought a step further of, you know, having that conversation with parent and then having parent almost reflect on their parent of how, you know, maybe their parent had ACEs. And for me, that can almost take off some blame, some internalized guilt even maybe. And yeah, I don't, for me, the whole light bulb thing that you just said, that to me is the ACE study. It just makes everything click, makes sense. It just makes sense. And it makes me want to scream it from the rooftops. And I want everyone to know about it. And the fact that we don't all know about it is so mind-boggling to me. But yeah, I too want to do more research on implementing it with parents.
Yeah, I like what you said, because I agree that I think it would reduce some of that shame that our parents feel in having to bring their kids to us. My kids are struggling. Am I a bad parent? Have I failed them? And if we could point out sort of the generational cycles, then it's an opportunity to say, well, what can we do to make it stop here?
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's exciting. That could be powerful for our family. So yeah, I'm all in on that one.
Yeah, definitely.
So ACEs is, well, at least in my opinion, so you can disagree, but it's really predominantly like an assessment tool, a screening tool. Once it's administered, though, there's a whole lot of weighty material that can be uncovered. So how do you then use it in treatment? What are your next steps?
Yeah, and I too have always thought of it as an assessment tool. However, I don't necessarily know that that necessarily has to happen during our quote unquote assessment phase. I think I shared this last time that to me, assessment is ongoing and it's always happening. So I am torn about when to implement. I do think it would be helpful during the initial assessment, just because of what we talked about earlier, kind of having that concrete questions to ask, the power of destigmatization. But then in terms of next steps, after you do ask the question, I think, or after you do implement, I think it depends on if we are doing the identified or de-identified versions, because circling back to our mandated reporter status, if we are doing the identified version and they are disclosing child abuse, then most likely we will be needing to get more information and possibly making a report. So that's kind of where my mind first goes. But then in terms of, you know, other next steps in treatment, I think it's, for me, an informational tool. It's helping me kind of understand the why behind maybe some of the behaviors that we're seeing that are bringing our kids into treatment. It's also, for me, maybe helping answer what needs are not being met. I tend to look at our quote unquote misbehaviors as what need is not being met. So that's my perspective. And I think having an ACE screener would help me start to get the answers to that, those questions that I'm asking myself. And then I also think it's, again, that into psychoeducation. And it also could help possibly determine what direction I'm going in terms of what coping skills we need to establish, current safety at home. I think, again, if we're doing that more, that Pearl screener with the more comprehensive questions that do go into the housing instability, food insecurity, those sort of things, you know, maybe I can provide resources, I can provide access to things that the family might need assistance with. So I think that also could be a beneficial reason to asking the questions at our initial assessment. But yeah, I'm open to asking it at various points and still kind of toying with exactly when.
You know, the CDC recommends societal concerted efforts to prevent childhood ACEs. There's so much in there on their website about how we can shore up families. In your work, you know, how do you work with families to mitigate these negative experiences, and like, how can we support our families better?
Mm-hmm. This is such a big question. And a hard question, because there's so much that needs to be done at a macro, societal, national, federal, state, local, I mean, every level. So very big question. But I think at the micro level, working, you know, with our families, with our clients, it's providing that safe, stable, nurturing relationship with our client, with our families, modeling that for our caregivers. It's the psychoeducation on the impact of trauma on our physical health, our mental health. It's psychoeducation on intergenerational trauma, like we just talked about. It's increased awareness. It's, for me, really a societal shift in how we look at ACEs and how we look at trauma. It's not a them problem. It's not a me problem, but it's a we problem. It's all of us. And that, for me, is what really stood out in the ACE study, was just how common ACEs were. And if you look at the population that they used in that study, you know, it was in San Diego, it was predominantly white population, predominantly college educated. And I think a lot of times, we like to other trauma and we like to put it on certain communities, or it only happens to certain people. And for me, the ACE study really debunked that and showed that it's happening to all of us everywhere, regardless of our skin color, regardless of our income, religion, you name it. So I think that is another, you know, way to prevent ACEs is through that psychoeducation. I also think it's early intervention and prevention. And so by asking these questions earlier in a child's life, we do have that power to intervene earlier. I think it's also routine screening, and going back to the ACEs Aware initiative, you know, I like to imagine a world where ACE screening was something, you know, equivalent to vaccines, and how to go to school, you have to turn in a vaccine verification, and to go to school, you have to turn in an ACE screening verification, and we could track and monitor exposure. And that way, you know, if from 1 year to the next something changes, we can get in there early, we can intervene, provide resources early. And so that's my dreaming world, of where it's a collaborative, comprehensive team effort. It's a societal shift. It's not shaming. It's opening, owning that we all experience it. It's not bad. If we experience it, we can get through it together. And that is kind of, I think, what the CDC is getting at too. But yeah, I think that's a long answer to your question, but
it was a good one. And I agree with you. I do think that is what the CDC is getting to as well. I sense that is their hope from a public health perspective as well. And sort of, that's a nice segue, your idea of that everyone be screened, to my next question. You know, I don't want any listeners out there to go away from this episode feeling like a high ACEs score is a life sentence. So I'm comfortable you know, in my role, full disclosure, I can say that my ACEs score is really quite high, but I'm doing well in my life. So what do you say to someone with a high score as comfort or reassurance to them?
Yeah. And to this, I think I turn to Dr. Nadine Burke Harris, who's kind of my ACE queen, my ACE role model. For those of you who don't know who that is our former first appointed California Surgeon General. She's a pediatrician, also has a master's degree in public health, and has really just made ACEs and toxic stress her passion and her thing. And so she, one of my favorite quotes from her, ACEs are not a destiny. And I think that is so beautiful and really hits on what we're talking about right now. And another quote from her is, "This might sound simple, but I cannot overstate this. The single most important thing is recognizing what the problem is in the first place." And so again, just going back to how this screener, this study is such a tool as a conversation starter, as an in, as a way to provide psychoeducation. And so again, going back to, you know, if you have a high ACE score, that does not mean your life is going to be shorter. That does not mean you're necessarily going to get one of these, you know, ACE associated health conditions. But it does mean that, you know, you are aware and now you know what could happen and you have the tools and the knowledge, or the knowledge, which to me is a tool, to do something about it. And then I think too is what I would, my piece of hope would also be understanding that you're not alone and that looking around you and knowing that based on the study, they say 64%, I think it is, so there's a good chance that somebody standing next to you also has experienced an adverse childhood experience, if not more than one. And so finding a sense of hope in the community of our collective experience to me is hopeful.
I loved that answer. Thank you. And I know these last two questions, I always close with them. I know you answered them in the other episode, but, you know, I don't know if everyone's heard that. So could you please share a success story of your work with a family where there was generational trauma, where they did have a high score, but they're doing well now?
Yeah, this was actually the first family where I really used the ACE study in my treatment with them. And it was scary because, again, it was my first time. I wasn't sure how it was going to go. I was worried about a lot of the things that we just talked about of, you know, am I going to have to make a report if they disclose? What am I going to do if I find out? What am I going to do with this information? And so I did the screener with the family for the child. And then during the screener, parents started disclosing her ACEs as well. And so parent ended up having an ACE score of 5. She had an incarcerated father, mother with mental illness and substance use, neglect, and her parents had separated. And then my tiny human client had an ACE score of 3, incarceration, mental illness, parents separation. And then what was, I don't even know what the word to describe this is, interesting was that both parent and kiddo who had ACE scores had associated health conditions. And so my tiny human had asthma, parent had asthma and was diabetic. And neither of them were aware of the connection between the experiences, the traumatic experiences, and their physical health conditions. And so through utilizing the ACE screener, we were able to make that connection. I was able to work with parent to understand the intergenerational trauma, to work with parent. Parent started speculating on her parents' ACEs. And so it was kind of a lot of aha moments for the family. And then in my work with my kiddo, we were able to kind of realize that she was blaming herself for her mom's depression. And she thought that she was the reason why mom was kind of experiencing all of that immense sadness. And so it ended up being beautiful. It was hard. There was a lot of disclosures, both from kid and from mom. But I will say it was almost like a weight was lifted, I think, for mom, because she did kind of realize that this was bigger than her. And this was intergenerational and just a lot of aha moments of this makes sense. Oh, okay. And so it ended up being really beautiful. And mom went on to tell everyone she knew about ACEs. And so I felt I had done my job because that is something that I'm, again, very passionate about. But yeah, it ended up being a beautiful story.
That's a great story. And I want to point out, granted, it's an N of one, but that's an example of using the survey on a parent.
That's
right?
True.
And,
yeah.
And look at what it opened up.
That's true.
Very, very thought provoking for sure. Mm-hmm. And then finally, you know, I end every episode on a note of hope. This is really emotionally challenging work that you do, especially in a community mental health setting where the trauma our clients experience is so complex. What are the bright sides for you? What still makes you feel hope?
Yeah. And I shared this last time. For me, it is that tiny human magic. And I say tiny humans because it reminds me that we all started out the exact same. We all started out being fully present, being so innocent, so pure. And we all carry that within us. And so being able to find that again, and when you work with tiny humans, you're exposed to it every single day. And so it's a beautiful reminder. But in particular, in relation to ACEs, it's the power of early intervention and prevention. It's the ability to help a tiny human overcome their trauma or begin processing, begin healing early on in their life so that they can live the rest of their life freely and excel in all that they do. It's breaking intergenerational patterns and thinking about all of the future kids that aren't even alive on this planet yet that we are impacting, which gives me the chills to think about, but that is what ACEs is. And that is what this work is. And so that to me is hope.
That's fantastic. Rebecca, you're just a remarkable guest. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your commitment and passion for what you do and for the ACEs questionnaire. You've definitely educated us all on one more tool in our therapy toolbox. So we appreciate you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
It's my position that by shining a light on these issues, admitting that they are in our own backyards, it will be easier for a struggling child to get some help. Ideally, we can all begin to be kinder and more supportive of each other.
In My Backyard is brought to you by the Guidance Center, a children's mental health agency in Long Beach, California. In My Backyard is produced by Tricia Costales and Matthew Murray. Thank you to J. Vincent B. for original music. All other music licensed through Soundstripe. Thank you to our listeners and supporters. Please visit tgclb.org or text HOPE to 562-262-5689 to make a one-time donation or join our Hope and Healing Club to become a monthly donor today. Subscribe to In My Backyard on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.